Hit it, Phil.
Can it be the breeze that fills the trees with rare and magic perfume? Oh, no! It isn't the breeze, it's Jackson time.
Well, hello again. This is Buck Benny speaking. Welcome to our final episode of the 1940-41 season of the Jack Benny Show from 70 years ago. I thought I'd just talk generally about all the Jack Benny's shows that we've been showing this year. This has been a great year for Jack Benny, and I felt a tremendous amount of support from all of you listeners out there that send me the wonderful emails and have been supporting the show. It's just neat to find a whole bunch of people like myself who love to spend time with Jack Benny and Mary Livingston and Don Wilson and Phil Harris, Dennis Day, Frank Nelson, Mel Blanc, just all the wonderful guests they have on the show. Rochester, of course, and Andy Devine. My goodness, there's just so many folks involved in this show that are all fantastic performers. And I hope you'll all join us again next year when we present next year's season of shows, which I'm dubbing the year of Phil Harris, since he's going to be in so many of our shows. We're going to have more Phil Harris next year, if you look at it, per week than we do Jack Benny, just because he's on all of Jack's shows plus his own shows. So it's going to be a fun year. I love presenting these shows. Love the fact that folks get so into hearing them. This particular episode is presented at with what Jack did a lot, which was go to naval bases and air bases and so forth, and present to the armed services his show and perform for the troops and for hospitals and things too. And I think it's fitting that we end with this episode, because now we'll launch into the war years, which is going to present a lot of episodes that happened during World War II of a lot of different shows. Some Jack Benny, some some are Fibber McGee and Molly stuff, some Gildersleeve, Fred Allen, just all the shows that seem to reflect what was going on in the war, certainly Command Performance and Mail Call as well. So I hope you tune in this summer to join us for the presentation of the World War II years. So we shall see you next time.
J-E-L-L-O.
The Jell-O program, starring Jack Benny with Mary Livingston, Phil Harris, Dennis Day, and yours truly, Don Wilson. The orchestra opens the program with Corn Out of Corn. Summer meals should be simple meals, ladies and gentlemen. And that's one reason why Jell-O is the ideal warm weather dessert. For Jell-O is one of the simplest and easiest treats to make. Dissolves instantly and sets as quick as a wink. No elaborate preparations are necessary. Your ice box or refrigerator does almost all of the work for you. And in practically no time at all, you're ready to enjoy one of the grandest desserts you ever tasted. Jell-O's bright glowing colors are gay summer colors. Jell-O's flavor is richly reminiscent of summer sun-ripened fruit. So get several packages of Jell-O tomorrow, choosing any or all of Jell-O's six delicious flavors: strawberry, raspberry, cherry, orange, lemon, and lime. And say, be sure that your choice includes strawberry, raspberry, and cherry, because each has a new improved flavor obtained by using a natural flavor base artificially enhanced. And the result is something mighty special, a flavor that's better than ever, a distinctive goodness that you find only in genuine Jell-O. Begin right now to add a note of cool delight and rich refreshment to summer meals with Jell-O, America's favorite gelatin dessert.
Jell-O.
That was Corn Out of Corn, played by the orchestra. And now, ladies and gentlemen, from the Naval Training Station here in San Diego, California, we bring you our master of ceremonies, that ex-sailor who doesn't know a porthole from a donut, Jack Benny.
Thank you, thank you. Hello again, this is Jack Benny, that old seahorse, or sea dog talking. And Don, you're a little off there on your introduction, because if there's anything I was familiar with when I was in the Navy, it's portholes. I saw plenty of them. No kidding, Don. My neck hung out of so many portholes, they used to call me Lavalier Benny. Yes, sir.
Well, Jack, I'll bet you're getting a big kick out of broadcasting down here, aren't you?
I sure am, Don. And incidentally, how do you like this suit I'm wearing?
Very apropos, Jack. Did you rent it for this occasion?
Rent nothing. This is the uniform I wore back in 1917 when I was at the Great Lakes Naval Training Station. It still looks pretty good, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. But judging from the uniform, Jack, I gather that you were not an officer in the Navy.
Oh, no, no, Don. I was just a plain, ordinary buck private. Now, that's all.
Oh, but pardon me, Jack, but buck private is an Army term. You must have been a seaman.
Oh, yes, yes, that's what I mean. I was a buck seaman. And there's hardly a thing I don't know about nautical science. I can chart a course, tie a knot, and all that stuff.
Well, nice going. Well, tell me, sailor, can you box a compass?
What is that, Don?
I said, can you box a compass?
Box a... No, Don, wrestling is my racket. Well, look who's here. Ahoy there, Mary, as we say in the Navy.
Hello, Jack. Hello, Don. Hi, boys.
Say, you got a nice reception there, Mary.
Why not? These boys know a trim craft when they see one.
Well, hey, that's pretty egotistical. My goodness, you'd think you were Ann Sheridan or somebody.
Look, chum, as long as Ann Sheridan is in Hollywood, I'm somebody here.
I see. Well, Mary, as long as you're so crazy about sailors, why didn't you notice the outfit I've got on? How do I look?
You look like a ticket taker on the Coronado Ferry.
Now, wait a minute. This is a sailor suit I'm wearing.
Yes, Mary. Jack tells me that's the same uniform he had during the war.
That's right.
What ship are you on, the Monitor or the Merrimack?
I'm talking about the World War. And furthermore, I enlisted when I was only 14 years old. My gray hair fooled them, you know. Well, really. So I'm not so old. Huh?
Why, Jack, you mean to say that you had gray hair when you were only 14 years old?
Oh, even before that, Don, my hair turned gray on my 8th birthday. I had a terrible shock.
No kidding. What happened?
He lost a nickel down a manhole.
That wasn't it at all. I was frightened by a horse car. Anyway, I joined the Navy, served a year and a half, and I'm wearing that same uniform right now.
Pardon me, is this the Jell-O program?
Yes. Oh, hello, Dennis. Well, so you didn't recognize me, eh, Dennis?
I sure didn't. Did you join the Navy, Mr. Benny?
No, this is the outfit I wore at Great Lakes in 1917. It's a real sailor suit.
Oh, can I borrow it later? I want to get a date tonight.
I'm sorry, Dennis, but I'm going over to the Paris Inn a little later myself. And if there are any dates to be had, I'll get them. Of course, if I meet a girl and she has a friend, I'll bear you in mind.
Any girl that would go out with you hasn't got a friend in the world.
That's so. Don't worry, Dennis. You and I'll step out later and paint the town red.
I don't want to paint. I want a neck.
That's what I mean. We'll go out and... That's what I mean. We'll go out and have some fun. My sailor suit will do the trick. Of course, I'm sorry I haven't got my medals with me. That would sink you.
Your medals? Well, how'd you get them, Jack? For bravery in action?
Well, I did see a lot of action, Donna.
What action? I heard you fell out of your hammock, and when you came to, the war was over.
Now, wait a minute, Mary. If that's the case, how come I got this bullet hole in my uniform?
Where?
Right there between my shoulder blades. At the bullet hole.
And why is that moss taking out of it?
Because it's hot in here. Well, let's forget it. Really? Oh, manana, manana, bambina, manana. Well, let's forget it. Now, Dennis?
Yes, please?
It's about time for a number, and I'm sure all the boys would like to hear you do a song, so let's have it.
Okay. Gee whiz, a bullet hole. Were you wounded in the war, Mr. Benny?
No. All I got was this bullet hole in the back of my blouse.
Wait a minute. If a bullet went through your blouse, why didn't it hit your skin?
I was moving, sister. I'd like to see the bullet that could catch me. Now, let's have your song, Dennis.
Aye, aye, sir.
Hold it a minute. Come in.
Mr. Benny?
Yes?
You know, I used to have gray hair when I was in the Navy.
Oh. Oh, then you did have hair at one time. How did you lose it?
I didn't lose it. I have a regulation haircut.
Well, that'll do it every time. Sing, Dennis.
From time till reveille, I dream the whole night through. Time till I hear reveille, I dream, my dear, of you. I have your face before me, the moment we're apart.
Was Till Reveille, sung by Dennis Day, and it certainly fits here. Well, Dennis, that's the last number you'll sing on this program till October.
But, Mr. Benny, what about the song I've got prepared for next week?
Well, there won't be any next week, Dennis. Next Sunday, the Jell-O Summer Show, regular fellas, takes over from New York. Say, Don.
Why do I have to go to New York to sing? I'm happy here.
You're much too happy, or you'd get this through your head. There'll be an entirely different show next Sunday. This program is over. You're not going to get paid.
That I'm used to, but I want to sing.
Well, get on a bicycle and tour the country. Okay, Don. Get on a bicycle and tour the country.
Oh, Jack, this is the silliest one yet.
Don, get on a bicycle and tour the country.
Oh, all right. Ladies and gentlemen, why don't you get on a bicycle, ride down to your neighborhood grocer, and ask him for a package of Jell-O?
Very good. Now, remember, Don, you're on a bicycle, so don't forget the handlebars.
Oh, very well. I'm sure you will find that Jell-O is handled by every grocer in the country.
So far, so good.
And gives families from coast to coaster break. Darn you, Jack Benny, I'll never spoke to you again.
My Don. It was very clever. Personally, I think it was one of the most brilliant...
Hey, Jack, look who's here.
Well, if it isn't the SS bridegroom.
Hiya, Jackson. All right, fellas, let me have it.
Well, you had to ask for it, didn't you, Phil?
Ask for nothing. These guys love me. They're my pals.
Oh, sure.
What are you made up for, Jackson? Why that sailor suit?
Well, I was in the Navy during the World War, Phil, so I thought it'd be nice to wear it down here. Of course, it's rather tight amidships. isn't it, Mary?
Yeah, and it's a little shiny around the stern.
No, it's not so shiny.
Then why is the officer wearing smoked glasses?
Now, don't be silly. Well, Phil, you know this is our last broadcast, and I'll be leaving for June Lake on that fishing trip tomorrow. You want to go with me?
Well, I'd love to, Mac.
I see.
But I'll be busy this summer playing them one-night stands.
Oh, out in the sticks, eh?
No, we're strictly big time this year. We ain't playing no ballrooms that's got cows sleeping at one end.
Well, Phil, I'd like to see the cow that could sleep through one of your band numbers, you know?
Oh, cut that out, will you? You're always running down my orchestra.
Well, I'm not blaming the boys, Phil. It's you. You let them get away with murder.
Oh, yeah? Well, let me tell you something, Jackson. Alice thinks I'm the best band leader in the business.
Phil, Alice is a dear, sweet girl, but she's giving you the business. Anyway, Phil, we're all glad that you and Alice are so happy.
I'll say we're happy. You know, Jackson, we've been married almost a month, and we've only had one argument.
Well, that's not a bad record, eh, Mary?
No. What was the argument about, Phil?
Oh, it was one of those things. We both wanted to use the curling iron at the same time.
Oh, well, that's easily remedied, Phil. Why don't you buy a curling iron?
She's working. Let her buy it.
You ever see a guy so vain about his appearance, Mary? If I didn't have a natural wave in my hair, I'd let it go.
You haven't even got natural hair.
Mary, one more word out of you, and I won't take you on a tour of that battleship.
You've got to take me along. I've got the pass.
What's this about a battleship, Jack?
Well, we got permission from Admiral Blakely to go aboard, and it'll be a real thrill for all of us.
Oh, boy, a battleship!
Some dialogue.
Oh, Archie, I wish I knew my lines for tomorrow. In fact, we ought to get started right away, fellas. Say, Phil, while we're gone, have your orchestra play a few numbers and entertain the boys here.
Okay, Jackson.
Wait a minute, I'll take it. Hello?
Hello, Mr. Benny, this is Rochester.
Darn it, that's more applause than I got. I don't know. All right, Rochester, what is it?
I'm getting things packed for our fishing trip. When are we leaving, boy?
We're leaving tomorrow afternoon, arrive at June Lake by midnight, and then we'll get up the next morning at 4 a.m. and go fishing.
4 a.m.? It'll still be dark.
I don't care if it is dark. We're going fishing every morning at 4 a.m.
What are we going to use for bait? Owls?
Look, Rochester, any angler will tell you that fish bite best early in the morning. So we'll have to get up at 4 a.m.
We do, eh?
Yes, you know, there's an old proverb, Rochester. The early bird catches the worm.
I got the worm. Wake me up at 9.
Rochester, you've got the wrong slant on this. This'll be fun. Imagine getting up when it's pitch dark and then getting into a canoe and gliding over the peaceful waters of June Lake. And then as the mist rises, the sun comes peeping over the horizon. And there we are on the lake, just the two of us.
Yeah, you and the sun.
You'll be there, too. Now, have you got everything packed in the Maxwell?
Everything but the canoe. I don't know where to put it.
Well, it's very simple. Tie the canoe on top of the car and turn it upside down.
I can't turn it upside down. There's an Indian in it.
That's our guide. Put him in the back seat. Now, Rochester, don't forget to pack that sack of potatoes. That's what we'll eat up at the lake. Fish and chips.
You mean fish and chops?
I mean fish and chips.
Fish and chops? I got a pig cooking in the radiator.
That's all we need, another squeal in that car. Now, let me supervise the packing, Rochester. I'll be back at the hotel right after the program. So, goodbye.
Goodbye. Oh, say, boss.
Now what?
Are you going to visit that battleship like you told me?
Yes, Rochester, we're leaving right away.
Does that boat go all around the world?
Yes, it does.
Well, ask them to keep their eye open for the gas man.
Oh, you and the gas man. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
He'll get up at 4 a.m. or I'll know the reason why. Well, come on, fellas, let's get over to that battleship. Stick close to me, fellas. There's a shore boat at the end of this dock that'll take us out of the battleship. See it out there in the middle of the harbor?
That sure is a beautiful sight.
Yes, sir.
Hey, Mr. Benny, what are those things hanging down from the mast?
From the mast? Oh, those are underwear. Scrivies, we call them. You know? It must be wash day.
Those are flags. Can't you see they're all different colors?
Oh, yes, flags.
You're a fine sailor.
Well, at this distance, anybody can make a mistake. Wait till we get aboard. I'll explain everything.
Hey, Jackson, are we going to have trouble? They're pretty strict, you know.
Don't worry, Phil. We've got a pass from the Admiral, and I met Captain Gearing, and I'm wearing my sailor suit. What more do you want? Hey, buddy, will you take us out of that battleship?
Have you got a pass?
Here you are.
Well, let's get in the shore boat. Watch your step, Dennis. Careful now.
Which side of the boat shall I sit on, Jack?
Neither one, Don. Get right in the middle. And don't lean either way. All right, buddy, we're all set now. Let's go.
Okay.
Heave-ho! Come on! Anchor the way!
Sit down in a boat. What do you think you are, a marine?
Boy, this is a life, sailing over the bounding main.
I wish this boat wouldn't roll so much.
Don't be a baby, Mary. You think this boat is rolling? Well, I was in a storm on Lake Michigan once when the waves were over 150 feet high. Not only that, I was washed overboard.
Were you drowned?
Never mind, just drive the boat.
You mean steer the boat.
All right, steer it. But no kidding, fellas, that was a real storm. I don't know how we ever came through it. Hey, how are you enjoying the ride, Phil?
Well, to tell the truth, Jackson, it's a little rough.
Oh, what are you talking about?
Hey, these waves are getting pretty choppy, aren't they, Jack?
You call this choppy?
Yeah, I don't feel so good.
Oh, what a bunch of sissies. This is nothing. Why, in that storm on Lake Michigan, I thought for a while we'd never... Oh! I thought we'd never... Oh! I thought...
What's the matter, Jack?
Change seats with me, Mary. I want to sit on the outside where I can enjoy the... Oh! View. Quick, move over. Quick.
Hey, Jackson, you ain't seasick, are you?
Of course not. How can I be seasick with a sailor suit on?
You'll make it.
No, I feel fine. Of course, the harbor is pretty rough today, isn't it, buddy?
No, I feel... Oh, fine.
Oh, fine. But, you know, this doesn't compare with that storm on Lake... Oh, Michigan. You know, when we started out...
Do you want a bite of this banana, Mr. Benny?
Put that away or I'll slug you. Hey, buddy, on second thought, I don't think we want to look at the battleship today.
I came here to visit a battleship, and I want to be one.
Here we are, Jack, right up alongside us.
You want to be a battleship? Okay, watch your step getting out. Ah, this is some battleship. Okay, give me your arm, Mary. Bring along my camera, Dennis.
I've got it.
Be careful going up the gangway.
Well, this is better.
How do you feel now, Jackson?
Fine, Phil. You know, to tell the truth, I haven't been on water in years.
I only went on it after I got married.
We know, Phil. The only time you've been in the gutter lately is to pick up your guitar player.
Gee, look at all those sailors. They sure have a big crew.
Yeah. Just a moment, please. Where you going?
We've got a pass to visit this battleship.
Yeah, we got permission.
Salute when you speak to an officer.
Aye, aye, sir. You see, fellas, he thinks I'm a real sailor. I look like one, too. Come on, kid.
Well, we're certainly lucky that you're along with us, Jack.
You said it. Anything you want to know about this battleship, just ask me.
Where's the ladies' room?
Don't be cute, Mary. It's a battleship. Now, kid, first I'll show you around this floor, and then I'll take you downstairs, and I'll take you downstairs and show you the crow's nest. No, it's worth seeing.
Jack, even I know that the crow's nest is up on the mast.
Well, this one slipped. Come over here, fellas.
Look at that sign. Ship's galley. What's a galley, Mr. Benny?
Well, the galley, Dennis, is where they steer the ship. See? Now, come on, kids. I'm going to show you this whole boat from one stern to the other. Let's go.
Lead the way, Lavalier.
Follow me. And here we are back to the gangway. It was a swell tour, wasn't it? Now, get in the shore boat, fellas. Mary and I will join you in a second. Come here, Mary. I want to take your picture. Stand alongside of those big guns. I want to get a nice background.
Okay.
Back a little now. That's it. Now, don't look right in the camera. Be nonchalant. Go ahead. Smile.
What are you doing there, sailor?
I'm taking a picture. A smile, Mary. There. There, that's better.
Give me that camera. You know, taking pictures on a battleship is against regulations.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You're sorry, sir.
That's right, sir. Well, come on, Mary, let's go.
Wait a minute, sailor. Where do you think you're going?
I'm going ashore. My gang's waiting for me.
You're not going anyplace. You're staying right here on this ship.
What? Oh, I get it. You think I'm a sailor stationed on this ship. That's a good one. Come on, Mary. So long, buddy.
Don't buddy me. I'm an officer.
But look.
And stand at attention.
Aye, aye, sir. I mean, what's going on here? Mary, tell him who I am. Tell him what my name is.
How do I know? I just met you at the Paris Inn last night.
Mary, this is no time to joke. Tell him who I am.
So long, sailor.
Mary, come back here. You can't leave me like this.
I know how you feel, sailor, but when duty calls, we all have to leave our girls behind us.
What duty? What are you talking about?
We're shoving off right now.
I'm not shoving off anywhere. I start my vacation next week. I'm going on a fishing trip.
There'll be plenty of fish where we're going, sailor.
Sailor, look, I'm trying to explain to you.
Now pull yourself together. And look at your uniform. There's a button missing.
That button has been missing for 20 years. Now look, mister. What's that? Hey, we're moving. Stop the ship. You can't do this to me. Mary, Don. Oh, we're moving. Gee.
Now take it easy, sailor. We'll be back in a month or so.
A month? How can I go away for a month? I tell you, I'm going on a fishing trip. My plans are all made. It's too late to change them. Now, you gotta listen to me. You can't keep me here. I'll make trouble. That's what I'll do. I'll make trouble.
How about a dessert for dinner tomorrow night that is really different and really delicious? Well, here it is. A swell new treat called Jell-O Cubes with Strawberries. It's a dessert that looks grand and tastes grand, too. And it's no trick at all to make. Just prepare one package of orange Jell-O, as you usually do, and turn it into a shallow pan. Chill until firm and cut into cubes. Then arrange these cubes in sherbet glasses with sweetened sliced strawberries. And to serve plain or with cream. Attractive? I should say it is. A perfect picture of bright, glowing beauty. And one of the most luscious desserts you ever enjoyed. So try this delightful treat tomorrow. We're sure you'll agree that strawberries never tasted so good and never looked so tempting as when blended with tiny glistening cubes of rich golden orange Jell-O. This is the last number of the last program in the current Jell-O series, and we'll all be with you again on Sunday, October the 5th. In the meanwhile, what will happen to our hero? Will it be back in time for the new season? Tune in October 5th and find out.
Mary, Don, Phil, Dennis, come after me. Tell this guy who I am.
Come on, sailor, swab that deck.
Aye, aye, sir. Terry Wood got me into this. Good night, folks. See you in October.
Well, hello again. This is Buck Benny speaking. Welcome to another great episode of the Fred Allen Show. I have not done a podcast in a few weeks. I've been kind of busy. And I could not resist doing a podcast for this episode. For one thing, the last couple weeks, we haven't had the highest quality of episodes that we're used to. And we've been missing the West Coast feed, of course, which is, of course, our highest quality, usually. This week's a lot different. This week we have the East and West Coast feed. And, for once, the only time I can remember all year, the East and West Coast feed, I couldn't decide by listening to them which one was better sounding. They're both recorded in high quality sound. They both sound great. My assumption is that wherever we were getting our West Coast feed from, they must have had a copy of the East and West for this week. Because it sounds like the same kind of transfer, the same kind of high quality. So anyway, if you're ever going to listen to both, this would probably be a good week to do it. Also, for the fact that this week's episode is the epitome of what makes Fred Allen's show so great. We have my favorite bit that he does, which is one long pan, which is totally, totally not PC and not appropriate for a modern audience, but it is funny. And I do love his hearing Fred do his one long pan. And anyway, I always look forward to the One Long Pan episodes, who, of course, is a takeoff on Charlie Chan. Now, what makes this episode so special for another reason is that it features Leo DeRocher. And Leo DeRocher was one of the greatest baseball players and managers of all time. He's in the Baseball Hall of Fame, and he should be. Boy, it'd be hard going through his career. He had this great career as a player. He was always known for being outspoken, and he was just one of the, you know, top characters ever in baseball. Probably in the top, you know, five characters in all of baseball, just for his personality and things. What I like is when somebody's a character and they do amazing things at the same time. You know, it's difficult. It's one thing to be a character, and it's one thing to do wonderful things, but if you can do both, it's amazing. And that's what Leo DeRocher had. For instance, of course, this is in 1941, but about 7 years later, he would help bring into the league, drop the color boundaries of the baseball league, and help bring in Jackie Robinson into the league, opening up baseball to African Americans. What he said, I love this quote he said to his team about Jackie Robinson. Let's see if I can find it here. "I don't care if the guy is yellow or black, or if he has stripes like a effing zebra. I'm the manager of this team, and I say he plays." I mean, that's about as supportive as you can get. And he just wanted to win games, and he just wanted the best players to play for him. And so he managed to get some of the best players coming through. I also like another quote from him. Let's see what my other quote is here. He says of Eddie Stanky, okay, whose nickname was the Spark Plug from the 1951 pennant-winning Giants team, "He can't hit, he can't field, he can't run. All he can do is beat you." So he's got some great lines like that. Interesting character. He was a player and a manager at the same time for a number of years. When at the point that Fred Allen interviews him is when he's doing both jobs. So pretty cool. And again, gets into that whole thing of Fred Allen not necessarily bringing on, you know, the Cary Grants and the Jimmy Stewarts to talk to on his show, but bringing forward these characters, whether they're folks in more obscure pop culture, like the creators of Superman, when he interviews them, Leo DeRocher, just folks that are a little off the beaten path that are fun for us to listen to because they're part of our history, instead of just the superstars of the films and that sort of thing, and of radio. And then the other thing he does is brings us the stories of the day for the time with his news that he brings, and of course the fact that he's got, I mean, this season has been incredible because he had, you know, Kenny Baker doing some great singing and some fun bits throughout. I love his whole cast is great. I don't know, this might be his best season ever of the hour-long programs, the most entertaining, I think. And the fact that we've had basically every single episode for the season is just phenomenal. I feel so lucky that someone has put these out there. I wish I knew who it was so I could thank them. Unfortunately, we've only got a couple weeks left of the season, and then these will be gone, and then next season is a lot more herky-jerky, a lot more missing episodes and things. I will bring to you what we have. For instance, a good example is the beginning of next season. Though the season starts in like October, I don't have any episodes until November. Mid-November is when we'll get into our first episodes. And then we have a pretty decent run up until, say, January, February, and then there's going to be some problems again. But I will bring you what I have. And for this summer, we, of course, have the Warriors starting up. We're bringing you the shows from World War II, where we left off from last year. And I'm going to feature every Fred Allen show that I have during that time frame, just because Fred is always talking about the war in basically every episode. So his show is the most historic or talks about what's going on of any of the shows that I can think of, any of the radio shows. The other one that does that a lot is Bob Hope, and so I'll be bringing you the Bob Hope episodes, of course, that are in this time frame as well. Anyway, enjoy this episode with Wong Lung Pan and Leo DeRocher, and enjoy next week's final episode of the Fred Allen Show for the season. Tomorrow's Fred Allen Show from 75 years ago is the last show for that season, so make sure you tune into that, and we'll see you next time.
The Texaco Star Theater. The more than 45,000 Texaco dealers from coast to coast welcome you to an hour of mirth and melody with our star comedian, Fred Allen, Kenny Baker and Portland Hoffa, our guest, Leo DeRocher, famous manager of the Brooklyn Dodgers, Win Murray and Al Goodman's orchestra. It's Texaco time. Good evening to y'all, folks. Tonight I'm proud as all get out to present a little old boy from down yonder who's here to spread some little old hijinks. And here he all is, little old Fred Allen in person.
Thank you, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. And Colonel Wallington, just a word with you, if you don't mind, if you'll set down the julep for a second. What was that southern accent?
Well, I've been down in Baltimore, Fred.
Been down to Baltimore yonder?
Baltimore, yes.
Jimmy, sir. A dialect like you have there at the moment, you can get staying under a sun lamp 8 minutes. I mean, not even 10 minutes to speak better.
Well, shut my mouth. Can I help it?
Well, if you can't help it, I can help it, Jimmy. Now, we can't have you walking around here talking like that all night. Now, there's a bridge game going on in the green room. You go in there, in the bridge game, and play north now until you shake off that hoe cake accent. And while you're gone, are you laughing? Something Cantor said years ago, I imagine. While you're gone, Jimmy, what a memory. While you're gone, we entertainment lovers will turn to the latest news of the week. The Texaco News presents its highlight from the world of news. New York City, New York. Another chapter in Broadway theatrical history is closed as the world's longest-run play, Tobacco Road, gives its final performance at the Forest Theater. Texaco News presents a summary of the facts that highlighted the career of this wonder show. First, a date that will go down in history.
December 4th, 1933.
On December 4th, 1933, the play Tobacco Road opened unheralded on Broadway. This documentary drama of life among a depraved section of the American populace was roundly panned by every New York theater critic. One critic said,
"Tobacco Road doesn't belong in the theater. A turkey belongs in a barnyard. This show is a turkey with a capital Turk."
A prominent gossip columnist said,
"No one can applaud Tobacco Road. It is impossible to hold your nose and clap at the same time.
I don't recognize the columnist, but I'm... But he runs a gossip column in the Hardware Journal, I believe. He looks nuts to me from here. But despite scallions and dire predictions, Tobacco Road proved to be a phenomenal success, running 3,180 consecutive performances. Today, it is just a memory, and native New Yorkers are saddened as the city's longest-run play is closed. The oldest resident in Greenwich Village said,
"New York ain't the same no more."
Well, how do you mean, Grant?
Well, first they tore down the Waldorf Hotel.
Yes.
Then they tore down the Hippodrome.
Yes.
Then they tore down the Sixth Avenue L.
Uh-huh.
Now Tobacco Road is gone.
Yes, all the landmarks are going, Gramp. It isn't much like New York anymore, is it?
If I hadn't just seen the mayor go by hanging onto a fire truck, I'd swear I was living in Bridgeport.
Too true, too true. And now some of the people associated with the Tobacco Road Company. The advance man who... he looks like the advance man for a famine, I mean. The advance man who toured America with road companies of the production, Mr. Sean Gross. How long did you tour, Sean?
Well, I was out with Tobacco Road 7 years.
7 years? You cleaned up, I imagine.
Yeah, the first year we played every other principal city right out to the coast.
Why didn't you play every city?
We were banned in every other city.
Oh, so you had to play...
Every other city.
Every other city. Well, what happened the second year?
We played every other of the other cities back from the coast.
Well, that killed the first 2 years. Now, what about the third year?
The next 3 years, we played small towns. Every year, the towns kept getting smaller.
Well, how small were they?
One town, the fire department didn't have no engine. The chief just had 8 foot of hose.
8 foot of hose?
Yeah, he could stand in the square and put out a fire any place in town.
He revolved, though, I mean, on occasion. Well, now that brings us to the sixth year scene.
Well, the sixth year, we was playing the show in a trailer.
In a trailer? Where?
Well, the first 6 months, we played thoroughfares and arteries.
Then?
Toward the end, we got off of cement and started playing detours.
Well, did you take the trailer out again this year?
Nah, we'd played every whistle stop, town hall, basement, and service station in the country.
Where did Tobacco Road play on the road in 1941?
This year we hit the road on foot.
On foot, the company, huh? Accompanied by an equity man, of course, hiking along. Well, how did you get audiences?
Oh, we played motels, overnight camps. If your car broke down, we'd do a show in the gutter for you.
No kidding.
Yeah, I was knocking on farmhouse doors.
For what?
Well, I'd say, "Good morning, madam. Do you want to see Tobacco Road?"
And if she did?
We'd do the show in the front yard.
Don't say.
Yeah, we were chasing people through fields.
What for?
Well, after we got them winded, we'd make them see the show.
Tell me, what is the smallest audience you played to?
One guy. He was caught in a bear trap.
Well, tell me, Sean, where did your show close?
Oh, it ain't closed yet. I quit.
What became of the actors?
Well, they're taking the show out again next year.
But where can they play?
Who knows? The leading man bought a compass.
Oh, he's gone. Well, I wish him success in his new fields. And thank you, Sean Groves. The original Jeter Lester of Tobacco Road is still alive and here tonight. What is your name, sir?
Well, nobody remembers. I've been to Equity and all over. Nobody remembers.
You tried Afra? They don't know there?
No, sure.
Well, don't you? Don't you know your own name?
Well, I used to know it. Then I got to playing Jeter in the show.
I see.
Everybody started calling me Jeter. They've been calling me Jeter since. Just call me Jeter.
All right, Jeter. Well, tell me, Jeter, how long did you appear in Tobacco Row?
Well, I played Jeter till I got too old.
Too old to act?
Yeah. First, the other actors was holding me up. Then I was creeping around.
You played Jeter creeping around the thing, did you?
Finally got so old I couldn't creep no more. When they started dragging me around on the stage, I quit. The skin kept coming off my stomach.
Oh. Who took the part then?
My son took over.
Oh, your son. Well, how long did he stay with the show?
My son played Jeter till his Social Security started. then his son took over.
Oh, I see.
My grandson was playing Jeter right up to the very end.
Well, in other words, three generations in your family have played the Jeter Lester part.
Yep, yep. All of us played the Jeters till we got them.
You don't say.
I still got the Jeter. See, my hand shakes so bad, I quit tipping my hat.
Why?
Well, it looks like I'm strutting.
Well, that's a little risque at your age, and thank you, Jeter Lester the First. The passé ingenue who played Lovey May during the entire run of Tobacco Road is Mary Beth Fron. How do you feel now that Tobacco Road is finally closed, Mary Beth?
I'm as happy as a hawk full of hen meat.
Well, are you a hillbilly or a hillbell, rather?
No. Years ago, I was with the Avenue B Little Theater Guild.
Oh, you were? Then you haven't talked like this all your life.
No, when I was playing down on Avenue B, I'm talking like this without an accent.
Without an accent, I see.
Then I'm joining Tobacco Road. I'm catching a hillbilly dialect. Suddenly, I started talking like this, like Rube.
The same thing happened to Wallington down in Baltimore. He didn't stay long enough. But you say that you're happy Tobacco Road closed.
I was getting fed up.
Fed up? How do you mean?
Well, during each show, Lovey May had to eat a turnip.
So at the end of 7.5 years...
I had ate over 3,000 turnips.
3,000 turnips?
Yeah, I was operated on 3 times.
For what?
Turnips.
Well, did you have any other ill effects?
Yes. From going barefoot in the play, my feet fanned out.
Oh, your feet fanned out, did they?
And when the show closed, I couldn't get shoes big enough to fit me.
What are you wearing now?
I got on 2 open-toed briefcases.
Well, I must say they look chic in a sloppy way. Well, with this dialect and your feet fanned out, you'll have a hard time getting another part.
Only part I can play is Lovey May.
Does this mean, then, that you are through with the theater?
No, sirree. I'm opening again Monday night.
In what?
Tobacco Road.
Well, Tobacco Road just closed.
Well, this here is a revival.
Oh, it didn't take long, did it? And thank you, Mary Beth Fron. Let us hear from you through the Wee and Leventhal office later on. And now, two boys who came up from Dirty Hollow, Kentucky, especially for the closing of Tobacco Road, the Setters Brothers. Now, what is it you boys do again?
We're the Traipsin' Troubadours.
Traipsin' Troubadours?
Yeah. We traipse around and sing.
You do? You sing what?
Mostly warnings and calamity songs.
Yeah.
Calamity songs? You mean songs like the wreck of number 49, they chopped down the old pine tree?
Yeah. That's
what we do. Happen as a calamity, we and sing it down.
Yeah, well, sure do, yeah.
Well, now tell me, could I interrupt just a minute there? What calamity songs have you boys written?
You shouldn't have pulled up the bucket, baby. Mother was still in the well.
That's one of your songs, is it?
Yeah.
And there's the devil's in that deck of cards.
That was one of yours.
A curse upon the coyote who ate my sister Sal.
That was one of yours.
Well, that was a smarty.
Yes, I remember it on the hit parade of 1871. I didn't have teeth in those days. I carried a big man with buck teeth to whistle for me. He used to go around. Remember him whistling that without the words. Now, and you feel that the closing, boys, you feel the closing of Tobacco Road was a calamity?
Sure was.
Weans wrote a song about it.
What is it called?
We're coming, Brother Jeter, 100 million strong.
Well, how does your Tobacco Road song go?
I'll let you in.
When the news rang through the mountains that they closed Tobacco Road, every gun came down from its cabin wall, hillbillies began to load. They can close the Burma Road, they yell, or the road to Zanzibar. But when they close Tobacco Road, by jeepers, they're going too far. So hold on, Jeter, those Yankees will explode. 'cause we're coming up from Dixieland to reopen your tobacco road.
Thank you. Thank you. Now, ladies and gentlemen, Kenny Baker. Kenny sings Throwing Pebbles in the Millstream.
Throwing pebbles in the millstream while I sit and dream of you. Every ripple brings a memory of each dream I ever knew. How plain I can see your dear face, the picture of our first embrace, the ripple that shows our first kiss takes a ride with the tide. Then I waken from my reverie, and my heart is thrilled anew. Throwing pebbles in the millstream, while I live a dream come true. I know that love has me in hand. I carve your name on every tree. I ask the daisies where I stand as I go to the stream where I always sit and dream. Dear face, the picture of our first embrace, the ripple that shows our first kiss takes a ride with the tide. Then I waken from my reverie, and my heart is thrilled anew. Throwing pebbles in the millstream while I live a dream come true.
Thank you. And now, ladies and gentlemen, lend an ear to this familiar strain. Here they come, this year's crop of June brides, marching up the middle aisle to take on their marital responsibilities. This month, thousands upon thousands of them begin cooking their husbands' meals, sewing buttons on their husbands' shirts, donning their husbands' socks...
and driving their husbands' cars.
You're right, Larry. The automobile is a factor in modern marriage. Today, a young man not only wonders if his bride can grill a steak, he also hopes that she can shift gears.
And the chances are she can. Recent figures show that in America today, about one-fourth of all car drivers are women. Yes, one out of four.
Is that a fact?
Yes, and we know for a fact, too, that the ladies have had something to do with the rising popularity of Texaco Sky Chief gasoline. It's only natural that they would, for the ladies are quick to recognize and enjoy great surging power on the road, yet power that handles smoothly in traffic. Sky Chief power doesn't balk when you've got a tight parking space to fill. It's less likely to stall at low speeds. It cuts shifting down to a minimum. And over and above its labor-saving side, the ladies respond to the graceful ease of Sky Chief power, the quiet, flowing way it does everything from a standing start to climbing a hill. Yes, ladies, Texaco dealers know the men have no monopoly on that Sky Chief feeling. Men and women, both, like to fly the highway with Sky Chief, Texaco's premium gasoline for those who want the best.
A Largo from the New World Symphony. And now, ladies and gentlemen... Oh, hello, Portland.
Hello.
You want to wait a minute? Mr. Goodman is clearing his throat. He has a line coming up in 15 minutes here. All right, Mr. Goodman? You should go ahead. Well, what are you excited about, Portland? You look as though you had just seen arsenic without the old lace or something. What's wrong?
Well, there are 10 men outside with clubs.
10 men with clubs?
Yes, and one of them says he's your guest tonight.
Oh, well, there's nothing to be alarmed about, Portland. Our guest this evening is Leo DeRocher, the manager of the Brooklyn Dodgers.
But those 9 men with the clubs...
Now, don't be frightened, Portland. It's probably the Brooklyn team.
What is the Brooklyn team?
Well, it consists of 9 men.
Is it like the Supreme Court?
Well, it used to be, but no more. Don't ask any other questions. I've got to get things ready. Say, Kenny.
Yes, I think.
Mr. Goodman.
Okay.
And you too, Portland.
Yes.
Now listen, everybody. Our guest tonight is Leo DeRocher, the manager of the Brooklyn Dodgers, you see.
Brooklyn Dodgers? What's that?
Please, Kenny. It's a baseball team. Now, Mr. DeRocher is used to a lot of noise and excitement over there at Ebbets Field every day, and we've got to make him feel at home when he gets here tonight.
Oh, you mean make a lot of noise?
Yes, plenty of noise from everybody. Portland, you yell, he's safe, he's safe.
He's safe, he's safe. Uh-huh.
Kenny, you yell, take that bum out.
Okay, take that bum out. Take that bum out.
And what is Goodman yelling?
You yell, hot dogs, get a red heart.
My old business already.
Never mind your old business. Don't forget, after I introduce Mr. DeRocher, everybody yell good and loud. Now, are we all set?
All set.
I'm ready.
Okay.
Fine, now break it up. Break it up, everybody. I'm going to bring him on. And now, ladies and gentlemen, may I present the dynamic and popular manager of the Brooklyn Dodgers, baseball's man of the hour, Leo DeRocher. Good evening, Mr. DeRocher.
Good evening, Fred.
He's safe! He's safe!
hot. Get a red hot. Hot dog. Hot dog.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Quiet. Quiet.
Get a hot dog.
Mr. Goodman.
I've only got one left.
Well, go back up on your podium and in good health and with mustard, eat it. I'm sorry, Mr. DeRosa.
What was that, Fred?
Well, I tell you, we just wanted to make you feel at home tonight, Leo. Now, we just cooked up a little baseball atmosphere for you. How was it?
Well, confidentially, it sounded like Ladies' Day in Cincinnati.
It did. You haven't met our cheering section, have you?
Only over the air, Fred.
Well, this is Kenny Baker. Kenny, this is Leo DeRosa.
Hi, Leo.
Glad to know you, Kenny. Say, you're a husky kid. I could use you on first base.
I don't sing bass. I'm a tenor.
That gives you an idea of what I'm up against around here, Leo. This is Mr. Goodman.
How are you, Al?
Personally, I'm betting the Cubs for a long pull.
Don't mind him. He's been playing horses for 40 years and hasn't picked a winner yet. And this is Portland.
Glad to know you, Portland.
Thank you. What is baseball, Mr. DeRosa?
You don't know what baseball is?
Well, Portland comes from Philadelphia, where I understand the game isn't played in either league.
I still don't know what baseball is.
Well, baseball is a game, Portland. A player stands at home plate, hits the ball, and runs around the bases back to home plate.
You mean he runs all around and ends up right where he started from?
That's right.
Oh, it sounds silly to me.
Now, please, Portland, after all, go and help Mr. Goodman eat his hot dog.
All right.
Hey, get the other end. Tell him I said so. Your digest description of the game was very good, Leo. That, the way you explained it, that is baseball as it is universally played.
Well, except by the Giants.
Oh, by the... They use another technique, do they?
Yes, the Giants have some game they play up there. I don't know just what it is.
Well, it's the polo grounds. Now, maybe the Giants are playing polo without the horses up there.
Well, that's possible, Fred.
Or they might be playing a beanbag with a hot bag, you know. Well, tell me, Leo, how long... I saw them. That first bounces out in the Giant game, isn't it?
Only at the polo grounds that could happen.
Well, tell me, Leo, how long have you been manager of the Brooklyn team?
This is my third season.
And before coming to Brooklyn, the gateway to Queens?
Well, I was with the St. Louis Cardinals 6 years. Before that, the Cincinnati Reds. And before that, I was with the Yankees when Babe Ruth was burning up the league.
Well, you've had more traffic with diamonds than Mr. Tiffany. Well, now we may as well get down to the business here, Leo. Do you mind if I ask you a question that has everyone in Brooklyn worried?
You mean the $64 question?
The $64 question, yes. The payoff. The answer to this question will certainly be worth a lot more than $64. And the question is, do you think the Dodgers are going to win the pennant this year?
Well, it's a little early to predict, Fred, but I think we've got a great chance.
Well, which teams do you figure will be battling it out with Brooklyn come October?
Well, right now, I'd say the St. Louis Cardinals and the Cincinnati Reds.
Well, how about the Giants?
The who?
My mistake, Leo. If Bill Terry is listening, this is the Bob Hope program.
Bill has got too many worries these nights to be listening to the radio, Fred.
Well, you know, since you went over to Brooklyn, Leo, you've about ruined us radio comedians.
Well, how do you mean?
Well, when the Dodgers were nicely down in the cellar and you could depend on them, I could always get a laugh saying Brooklyn fell out of the National League and got down into the weather report that day. Well, now you're up there in first place. We radio comedians are sunk.
Well, I'm sorry, Fred. It's every man for himself.
Well, to what do you attribute Brooklyn's new lease on life?
I think the credit should go to Larry McPhail.
Mr. McPhail is the president and general manager of the club, isn't he?
Yes. He's a brilliant executive, and he knows baseball. He built up the Dodgers by getting players like Medrick, Higbee, and Herman. And he also helped to develop some of the younger men like Reese and Reeser.
Well, didn't Mr. McPhail also help to put over night baseball?
Yes, he's mainly responsible for its popularity. Take my word for it, Fred. Larry McPhail's a smart fellow and a great boss.
Well, that's a nice tribute, Leo. Say, tell me, what is it that makes Brooklyn such a great baseball town anyway?
Well, it's the fans. Believe me, a Brooklyn baseball fan is like no other living creature.
Well, anthropologists... Anthropologists who have done research work in the bleachers over at Ebbets Field say that the Brooklyn fan has the temper of Gargantua, the sentimentality of a sob sister, and the lungs of a hog caller.
Well, you're right about the lungs, Fred. I've played ball all over the country, and I can swear that 10,000 fans in Brooklyn will make more noise than 50,000 any place else.
Oh, yes. If the wind is right, you can hear a bad decision at Ebbets Field as far north as Yonkers. But just between ourselves, Leo, is it true, this is confidential, is it true that umpires in Brooklyn ride to and from the ballpark in armored cars?
Well, nothing an umpire does would surprise me.
I guess not. You know, I heard one time that in moments of sheer abandon, fanatical Brooklyn rooters have been known to actually throw things at the umpires.
Why, I'm surprised at you, Fred. It's against the law to throw things at an umpire.
Well, I know, but do the fans ever do it?
You mean, do they break the law and throw things at an umpire?
You know what I mean. Do they?
Well, I,
That's all I wanted to know. You players get to know some of the more rabid fans who keep coming out to the park day after day?
Yes. There's one old lady who's 70 if she's a day. She's out in the bleachers every afternoon, ringing a big cowbell and hollering her head off.
Well, probably the wife of an old good humor man. Well, are there any other unusual customers?
Well, there's one man who comes out every day with a big oxygen tank and a load of balloons. And every time Cookie Lavagetto makes a play over at third base, this fan releases a balloon with Cookie written on it.
A balloonatic, eh? Well, tell me, Leo, you are one of baseball's leading shortstops. Now, do you plan on playing much yourself this season?
Only when Reese can't play, Fred. Reese is doing a great job at shortstop.
Hey, how does it feel to be head man over there? Do you find it difficult to handle a mob of baseball players?
Not our bunch, Fred. You see, we don't have much temperament on our team. The Dodgers are out to win ball games and to give the fans the best they've got. A team with that spirit is going places.
Yes, it certainly is. Well, Leo, it's been nice of you to come over tonight and batter out a few verbal fungos. Now, before you go, there's just one more question.
Well, what is it, Fred?
Well, you have consummated a couple of, shall we say, innuendos. Can you handle it? Innuendos.
If I handle it fast, I can get two.
You can get two bases on it. But we don't want any errors here. I mean, if I can... you have just consummated a couple of, shall we say, indelicate remarks about the New York Giants. Now, tell me, what started this feud? What has Brooklyn got against the Giants?
What have you got against Jack Benny?
You mean it's that bad?
It's worse, Fred.
Well, at least you're luckier than I am, Leo. I didn't get a chance to lick Benny twice on Decoration Day.
And we're not through yet.
I see what you mean, and good luck to you in the World Series.
Thanks, Fred. Good night.
Good night, and thank you. And you're now Texaco's girlfriend, Wynn Murray, sings Thumbs Up.
Thumbs up, don't you let that spirit dip. Thumbs up, stiffen up that upper lip. If there's a job to do, we're gonna do it right. When the job is done, we know each Yankee son of a gun will have his thumbs up, just to show that we're okay. Thumbs up, that's the Yankee Doodle way. How can we go wrong when we're 100 million strong to holler thumbs up, thumbs up, thumbs up today? When there's work to do, it's true that we have always that spirit dip. Thumbs up, stiffen up that upper lip. If there's a job to do, we're gonna do it right. When the job is done, we know each Yankee son of a gun will have his thumbs up, just to show that we're okay. Thumbs up, that's the Yankee Doodle way. How can we go wrong when we're 100 million strong to holler thumbs up, thumbs up, thumbs up today?
Well, Winnie, before you go, I just want to say thank you.
You're welcome, Mr. Allen.
What? What was that you said, Win?
I said you're welcome.
Gad, Winnie, this is a surprise. In all my years in show business, and all the thousands of times I've said thank you to artists, you are the first one who has ever said you're welcome. How did you ever happen to say you're welcome?
My Texaco dealer always says it.
Ah, that explains it. Texaco dealers are the ones who know how to say you're welcome and mean it. Am I right, Jimmy?
Absolutely right, Fred. When you stop at a Texaco dealer, whether you need gasoline or not, you're welcome. The green and white Texaco registered restroom sign is something a tourist appreciates. A welcome sign in all 48 states. The ladies, particularly with the little folks along, trust this sign that identifies a spick and span restroom, a pleasant place to freshen up during the journey. Texaco dealers are proud of this trust and pledge to keep these restrooms not only clean, but equipped with running water, soap, towels, and mirror. Everything for your comfort and convenience. And to help maintain this pledge, a famous fleet of inspection cars covers America, Texaco's White Patrol. So the next time you're out in your car, watch for the Texaco registered restroom sign. Remember, you're welcome at Texaco dealers. Texaco Star Theater continues immediately after a short pause for your station identification. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Because you should be set to music played by Al Goodman under the direction of his orchestra. Hardy shakes a stick, who knows what happens. And now, ladies and gentlemen...
Congratulations, Mr. Allen.
Oh, thanks, Portland, but why the congratulations?
This is your birthday, isn't it?
Say, that's right. Darn it, I was hoping nobody'd bring it up.
Congratulations, F.A.
Thanks, Kenny.
And to you, I, Goodman, am also saying congratulations. It says here.
Well, thanks, everybody, it says here. It's certainly nice. What's this? More congratulations? Come in.
Mr. Allen?
Yes?
I'm from Western Union.
Oh, I know. I can see the outline of the bicycle seat. What's on your mind?
Well, seeing as how this is your birthday and you're so popular, Western Union figures a lot of telegrams will be coming in for you.
Oh, and you bear form tidings, do you?
No, sir. I've been assigned to cover your birthday exclusively.
Well, good.
I've got a portable ticker set up outside the door.
Lucky you.
I'll pop right in with anything that comes right over the wire. Yes, sir.
Well, that's awfully nice of you, and I do mean you.
Oh, thanks, sir. We're permitted to accept tips, you know.
Well, there's been a nasty rumor to that effect running around.
Yeah, seeing as how everybody was remembering you, I thought if you want to remember me...
Remember you to whom?
This is going to be like pulling teeth.
Something tells me I'm going to have trouble with that bald-headed youngster.
Presents.
Presents? You didn't buy presents for little old corrugated me.
We sure did.
Oh, you shouldn't have done it. Why, I hardly know what to say.
Oh, it's nothing, F.A. Just our jobs, that's all.
Yes, you've got something there. I see what you mean.
Here's my present, Mr. Allen, and many happy returns.
Well, thank you, Paul. What is this?
It's a birthday birthday cake.
This piece of paper, where's the cake? Did you forget to wrap it up?
No, that's the cake. It's a recipe.
Oh, the recipe for the cake.
All you have to do is baking it. Delicious.
Fine, I'll whip it up right away. Well, come in. Yes?
No telegrams yet, Mr. Allen. I thought I'd look in and let you know.
Well, thanks for looking in and letting
me... I've got everything ready on my end. How about you?
I'm ready.
You got plenty of change?
Yeah.
Well, then everything's going to be tip-tip.
That's tip-top.
This bum can't even take a hint.
I'll report that, boy. I'll go to the president.
President is reminding me. I, Goodman, am giving you your birthday present. Many happy returns.
Well, thank you for the president, Mr. Goodman.
Gosh, a candle.
Yes, what is this candle, maestro?
Obviously, I am waxing sentimental.
Oh, this is for my birthday cake?
After you are baking it, obviously.
Well, fine. A combination present. A candle for my cake, and after eating it, I need dental floss. I can use the wick.
Wick, he is saying.
Well, why not?
A candle on a birthday cake represents a year, not a wick.
You mean weak, as in that last joke.
Weak? This is the nickname of another orchestra leader, Victor Young. We are calling him Weak for short.
That's Victor Young, Vic.
Vic. That is what in a candle is burning, the Vic.
Well, we finally got back to where we started, which is unusual on this program. Come in.
Any telegrams yet, Mr. Allen?
You're asking me. You're from the Western Union, remember?
Oh, yes, that's right.
You're supposed to bring me the telegram.
We haven't had any for you
well.
Yet. Hey, look, has that other company been snooping around here?
The people with the Surge outfit? No, nobody has brought any telegrams.
Well, it's getting kind of late, ain't it?
Well, it's my birthday. Why should you worry?
Oh, that's right. I guess the wife will come pouring in any minute now.
Yeah.
I'm all prepared. You all ready?
Yes, I'm ready.
You sure you got plenty of change?
Ample.
If you want to break a big bill, I can run out. Frankly, I feel like running out. I feel very
well,
good.
Let now, me... all right. Look, if you feel like running out, I'm going to bake a cake here in a minute. I'll need a few things. Now, you can get me a couple of eggs.
Eggs? You're sending out for eggs on this program?
What a birthday. Insults, a non-existent birthday cake, a candle to stick into nothing.
Are you ready for my present now, F.A.?
I'm ready for anything now, Kenny.
Here you are, F.A., and many happy returns.
Well, thank you. What is wrapped in this little piece of Kleenex?
It's a match.
What can I do with a match on my birthday?
You can light the candle, put in your cake when you get it baked.
Obviously.
You keep out of this, maestro.
Hey, now listen here, bud. I got a wife and kids. I've been standing around here all night and I ain't made a nickel yet.
What am I supposed to do?
Can't you get some of your pals to send you a wire? I gotta live too, you know.
Name, run, reason why.
Don't change the subject. Haven't you got a friend?
I have been in radio 9 years. I haven't got a friend left. Well, only relatives.
At least one wire would help. It would keep up my courage. Can't you get just one wire?
Well, all right. I'll send myself a birthday greeting.
Oh, good.
Now, take a message.
Yep.
Fred Allen, care of Texaco Star Theater.
Yeah, got it.
Congratulations, signed, your greatest fan and admirer, Fred.
You can have 10 words for the same thing.
I don't want 10 words. Just deliver that wire.
Okay.
Fine thing. My birthday and I... Come in.
Telegram for Mr. Allen.
I'm Mr. Allen, boy.
And shall I sing it? I'm in good voice tonight. But put it out there.
No,
the
no,
Texaco
no,
Star Theater.
Never mind. Never mind. Don't bother. Don't bother with the libretto. Just give me the music, rather. Just give me the libretto.
Okay, here you are.
Thanks. Well, what are you waiting for?
It's collect.
Collect?
Yeah.
Who'd send me a collect birthday wire?
Well, you with the
wire. Well, only a rat would do a thing like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, but you would...
Take this wire.
What'll I do with it?
Tear it up.
Tear it up.
I don't want any greetings from Crumbs.
Crumbs, but you sent the
You're
wire.
You're sticking up for him, hey?
Yeah.
That's the last straw. Scram, you.
You bet I'll scram. I'll be lucky to get out of here with my bicycle.
Why, that hairless hireling. If he comes in here again, I'll part his skin.
Yeah, that boy ought to be ashamed of himself, picking on an old man.
Who's an old man?
Well, you're a year older, F.A.
Well, years don't mean anything to me, Kenny. Where I come from, men are men, and we live for eons. Did you ever hear, perchance, of Fergus Milford?
Fergus Milford?
Fergus Milford from old Orchard Beach, Maine. He was an acrobat on the Orpheum circuit. When Vaudeville died, Fergus was 108 years old, and he was on number two at the show in St. Paul that week, the Small House.
108 years old and still an acrobat?
Doing handsprings and defying gravity on a teeter board. When Vaudeville finally folded up, Fergus went out to Hollywood to try to get into pictures. That was 6 years ago. Well, Fergus must be 114 years old now.
Well, I never heard of anybody named Ferguson Milford in Hollywood.
Well, I know he's out there because when he arrived, he sent me back my pogo stick. He borrowed it for the trip.
108 years old and he went out to Hollywood on a pogo stick? I don't believe it.
That's the truth.
Oh, yeah? Well, prove it.
Well, of course, I might.
Mr. Allen!
Are you in here again? I told...
But you finally got a telegram. It just came. It's from Hollywood.
Ah, probably birthday greetings from the entire movie industry. What does it say?
It says, wire me $20. Have heavy date with Lana Turner.
Who is that from?
It's signed Fergus Milford.
You see, Kenny, where I come from, men 114 years old are still chasing sweater girls. What have you got to say?
Sing, Kenny.
No kidding.
The glow of sunset in the summer skies, the golden sparkle of the fireflies, the gleam of love light in your lovely eyes. These are the things I love. A silver moonbeam peeping through the trees, a bed of tulips nodding in the breeze, the look you give in answer to my pleas. These are the things I love. Oh, once I thought that life was just a winter thing. My heart was cold, and then you came to me, and like a breath of spring, you turned the silver snow to gold. A robin serenade when day is through, the babbling brook beside our rendezvous, your sweet voice whispering, darling, I love you. These are the things I love. They say that all who love are blind, but that is not the case with me. For more and more each day I find my love for you has made me see. The glow of sunset in a summer skies, the golden sparkle of the fireflies, the gleam of love light in your lovely eyes. These are the things I love. A robin serenade when day is through, a babbling brook beside our rendezvous, your sweet voice whispering, darling, I love you. These are the things, these are the things I love.
Too, Mr. Goodman. Mr. Goodman's music is exceptionally fine tonight, don't you think, Jimmy?
Do you call that music?
Well, don't you?
Bluntly, no.
Oh, now, look, Jimmy, you're not only treading on dangerous ground, you're also standing with your back exposed to an old orchestra leader who uses a tomahawk as a baton. Now, you'd better either retract that statement or explain yourself.
Oh, Al Goodman's music is fine as far as it goes, Fred. But after all, what is it? Sound and fury signifying nothing. What's music to my ears is a sound that means something.
For instance, Jimmy?
Well, for instance, this. Now,
There's a sound that means something.
Is that a fact?
Yes, sir. To all the world, the sound of a fire engine streaking down the street means full power. You just know there couldn't be any duds, those useless slow-action elements, in a gasoline especially made for fire engine duty. Texaco Fire Chief was designed for fire engines, ambulances, patrol cars, and other emergency duty vehicles. Fire Chief turns in the brilliant performance the drivers of these vehicles demand because the duds are out, removed in the refining. Fire Chief is full power. Full power instantly ready at the start, on the pickup, and at every pinch that calls for sudden speed. Yes, Texaco Fire Chief, at regular gasoline prices, is the emergency duty gasoline. All action, not a dud in a tank full. Next time, try a Texaco dealer.
And now, huzzahs, the Texaco Workshop players. Tonight they present a radio murder mystery. It's called Who Plugged the Announcer While the Announcer Was Plugging? Or One Long Pan Comes Through on a Ghost-to-Ghost Hookup. Music, maestro.
This is Station D-R-I-P. Bend over, makers of the Bend Over Belt Buckle Watch, the watch you have to bend over to see, bring you the correct time.
The correct time is exactly 12 minutes to...
12 minutes to what?
I don't know. The hour hand just fell off my watch.
The correct time is exactly 12 minutes to... And now, stand by for our next program, Mother Mumble.
If day seemed drab and life seems dull, do not grouse or grumble. There is one who has more trouble than you. We bring you Mother Mumble.
Yes, once again, Chilton, the makers of Chilton's Chili, bring you Mother Mumble. Before we tune in on today's heartbreaking adventure of Mother Mumble, the lovable old hag, we present our sponsor, the man behind Chilton's Chili, Mr. Chilton, in person.
Thank you. This is Chevney Chilton, maker of Chilton's Chili, saying, Chilly-o, folks, how have you been? I'm the only sponsor who appears on his own program. My chili is the only chili that is shot out of a gun. Later in the program, we'll show you how it's done. Mother Mumble shoots a mess of chili from a gun. I catch it on a plate. Then Mother Mumble, Mother Mumble is her name, bolts it down before your very eyes. I thank you.
Yes, folks, men are crazy about Chilton's Chili. Mr. Norval Doak of Torn Twig, Tennessee, right?
I ate me a mess of that Chilton's Chili. My stomach got so hot on the outside, it fried my vest.
Housewives, too, praise Chilton. Mrs. Nippy Dink of Possum Point, Arkansas, right?
I'm 82 years old. I ate a can of Chilton's Chili. Didn't stop jitterbugging for 2 days. Scrub me, Daddy. Hey.
Chilton's Chili is the only chili that is shot out of a gun. Like this.
Oh, I'm shot!
Mr. Chilton!
Oh, my God.
Mr. Chilton!
Oh,
Mr.
He's
Chilton!
Dead. He's dead.
Keep your place in the studio audience. Don't anybody move. I'll call the police. Hello? Hello? Help, police! Murderer, Studio B! Help!
Attention, Radio City Special Police. Attention, Radio City Special Police. Report to Studio B. Murder in Studio B. All 55-cent tours following police to look at body. It will be 10 cents extra, that is all.
Open that door, sound man.
Yes, sir.
Oh, greeting, greeting, Miss and Miss America. From butter to butter and toast to toast, all sips of tea. Let's go to Fresh.
Who are you, bud? Walter Winchell and Pigtails?
Not Walter Winchell, Figtail. I am Detective One Long Pan. It all comes back to me now, because I'm the finance man. You better pay what you can, or it all comes back to me now.
Oh, brother, a Chinese Kenny Baker.
You bet, Long Pan Chinese. Like Loxy Theater, Long Pan 60% coolie inside.
If you're a detective, what are you doing in Radio City?
Long Pan do guest shot, we the people. Hear murder alarm, come pronto. What happened?
Chevney Chilton, the chili baron, has been murdered.
Very good, Long Pan go to town. First Long Pan grill thin man over here. You come clean, Mr. Thin Man.
That's not the thin man, it's the microphone.
Oh, microphone. Long Pan audition, Long Pan tell funny story. Roof off from Ryan's. Hello, hello. Hello, Soaks. Hello, Soaks. Funny thing happened on way to murder. Panhandler come up to one long pan. One long panhandler. Oh, 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 oh. Oh, cooperation. Sun saddle stop. Bring down the house.
You're wasting your time, long pan. We're off the air. That Mike is dead.
Oh, long pan catch you. First you say Chevy Chilton dead. Now you say Mike is dead. You come clean, oh, you bad, sweaty boy. Who is dead?
Mr. Chilton, the sponsor.
Oh, yeah? Who are you, Mr. Beggy Pants with eyes to match?
I'm Ben Growler, the announcer on this program.
What you know about murder, Mr. Prowler?
Well, we were doing the same commercial we've been doing for 7 years.
What a commercial?
Chilton's chili is the only chili that's shot out of a gun.
Shoot the chili to me, Willie?
No. Mother Mumble shot the chili out of her gun, and Mr. Chilton caught it on a plate.
You say Mother Fumble shoot the gun? Very suspicious.
But my gun was loaded with chili, Long Pan.
Only same, maybe chili killy.
How can chili killy? That's silly.
Oh, very good poem, very good poem. You send the Nick Kenny, maybe catch him $2. No time, horse around. Now, what happened, Mother Stumble?
For 7 years, 5 mornings a week, I've been shooting the chili at Mr. Chilton. It's in my contract.
After you shoot chili?
Mr. Chilton would hand me the plate of chili, and I'd eat it at the microphone.
If you shoot chili out of wet gun, what make noise? Answer, long pan. What make noise? Now, what make noise?
The sound man fired a real gun to make the shot.
Aha, sound man, little man, fire a real gun. Very suspicious.
Yeah, but my gun only shoots blanks, Long Sam. Look, I'll break open my gun. Say now, nobody can't kill nobody with no blanks.
Very baffling. Then who killed Chevy Chilton?
Maybe it was a heart attack, Long Pan.
Long Pan examined body. Maybe heart clump. Maybe heart take a go out in heart. Great bridge game. But the first question, witness and studio audience. You frowsy boy, first row.
Oh, me?
You come up here.
Oh, no, not me. I ain't going up on no stage.
Why not?
My mother went up on a stage one time. The magician made her disappear. I've been an orphan ever since that matinee, not me.
You see, Mr. Chevy Chilton murder, you see, you catch him?
Yeah, Mother Mumble and the sound man was fighting with Chilton.
Who was fighting?
Yeah, who?
Both of you. Just before the show, you was fighting about the sound effects.
Aha, fight important clue. What happened? Confidential, buddy, happened?
Well, they was both sore at Chilton. They both shot guns. Chilton. Either one could have killed.
Oh, you see?
But my gun was full of chili.
My gun shot off a blank.
Oh, someone tell fib here. Long panic, seven body for good now.
Mr. Chilton is lying there, just as he fell, Long Pan.
Very good. Holy smoke, a body mesh, chili all over front like ketchup a windbreaker.
Well, yes, when Chevney fell, the chili spilled off the plate on his vest.
Exactly, and like a flash, mystery solved. Mother Bumble, Long Pan, unless you for murder Chevy Chilton.
What?
You're insane.
Sure, Long Pan, you are guilty party.
Can you prove it, Long Pan?
Solution very simple. Sound man stand aside. No bullet hole in Chevy Chilton's side. Mother Gumbo here, a little sorceress, stand in front. Bullet hole in front, you see?
Oh, yes. A bullet hole right through his Kiwanis button. He wore it in his tie.
Good.
Yeah, that's right. I remember now. He didn't fall when the shot was fired. He dropped when the chili hit him.
Exactly. Mother Gumbo, fire chili, kill Chevy Chilton.
All right. I did it. I had to do it.
Why you kill sponsor, Mother Tumbo?
It was that commercial. For 7 years, 5 mornings a week, Chilton made me eat that chili.
Oh.
For 7 years, every afternoon on the repeat show, I was eating more chili.
More chili, bad at Chilton. More chili, too much chili.
I must have eaten 40 tons of chili. My stomach felt like an oven. My breath was burning holes in my veils. My front teeth are clinkers. Beans rattled around when I walked.
Holy smoke.
I begged him to change that commercial. He laughed at me. I couldn't stand it, so I slipped a bullet inside a chili bean, and I killed him. I killed him, and I'm glad.
Exactly. Long Pan close case. Drop charges.
You mean I'm not guilty of murder, Long Pan?
Not murder, Mother Fumble. Justifiable sponsor side. Aesop say man who make chili deserve also to go to hot place. Weak finish, but music cure nevertheless. Catch him, good man. Now, a final word from Larry Elliott.
The United States government is asking the people of America to buy defense savings bonds and stamps. This money will be used to finance the National Defense Program. Tonight, we're calling to your attention this message. Buy a share in America. Buy that share by purchasing defense stamps and bonds tomorrow at your post office or bank.
Thank you, Larry, and thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us tonight. Next week, we'll have America's number one publicity man, Monty Prosser. Hear how stars are made stars, how gigantic ventures are made gigantic. Gigantic next Wednesday night. This is Fred Allen saying good night for the more than 45,000 Texaco dealers from coast to coast and inviting you to drive in anytime. Remember, you're welcome.
This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Well, hello again. This is Buck Benny speaking. Welcome to another edition of our Saturday episode of the Jack Benny Show from 75 years ago. This is another one, unfortunately, that is missing about half the episode. So this is just the first half. Some wonderful folks wrote into me to explain why this happens so often. Apparently, because, of course, when they were playing these originally, they wanted to be able to play them straight through. They would have the first half on one disc, and instead of having the other half on the back side of the disc, the flip side, like a record, that would disrupt the program too much. And so they would have the second disc on the second half of the show on a second disc. And so over time, either the second disc would get destroyed or lost, and so you would only have half an episode, which makes total sense to me, and that was wonderful for you folks to explain that to me. What I find so interesting about my podcast audience, actually, is when I originally created this podcast, I intended it, it was really kind of for me, because I went out and was searching for somebody who was doing shows in chronological order and who was introducing episodes, and there was nothing like that. So I thought, well, I could do that. So then I started doing them in order for me to have the shows kind of done the way that I wanted to do them, in a way that was chronological, where it'd go along with the time of year and all of that, which people really liked. And then folks would tell me, oh, we want more podcasts, we want more podcasts. So then I would do more and more of the podcasts. And I was thinking, okay, for beginners early on to old-time radio who haven't downloaded many shows themselves and things, they probably would enjoy this. And it seemed like that was true. But then I realized a lot of folks would write me and say, you know, I have a giant collection of old-time radio shows and things, but it's just nice to have somebody kind of pick them out and do them in this chronological order thing and that whole bit. And so I was attracting a lot of people that knew a lot about old-time radio and knew a lot about Jack Benny and in many cases more than I did. My favorite comment from one of these folks was, you know, even when you're wrong, it's interesting, you know, and I go, yeah, okay, fine. I'll try and be interesting. I'll try and be somewhat accurate too, but sometimes I can't, I'm just not. Anyway, my newest and oldest controversy going on is we're having a little discussion about my intros and whether they're too long and whether someone has mentioned that they're boring. Sorry, I almost fell asleep there, but I do realize certainly the one from Thursday night was pretty long. I would have redone that one historically. I mean, what I tend to do is when I do too long of a rambling podcast, I would usually realize it and then redo it. But now, because, you know, as I've said before, I'm trying to spend more time with my family and spend less time doing the podcast, but still trying to keep up the number of podcasts I do. What it means is it's, I've kind of cut down on my redos, and I just kind of go, well, that's close enough. That's what I'm going to put out there. So you're going to find that some of my podcasts now are maybe less polished than they were, though they weren't polished to begin with. But I'm just going to do my best, and people keep saying that they want me to introduce the episodes, so I'm going to keep on introducing the episodes. And really, I don't know if I've discussed this on the air before, but I really have a kind of a plan anyway, because I was figuring within 5 years, I can totally have most of where I can do a podcast for virtually every Jack Benny show that's existed in about a 5-year time span. So, because I do 4 a week, and it's just kind of cool to think, okay, I can have introductions to every single Jack Benny show, or at least the majority of them. So that's kind of my goal, and then I do other podcasts along the way as well. Back to tonight's episode. Last thing I'll cover tonight. This episode is neat because it features the writers of Love in Bloom, which is kind of neat to hear them. Jack talked to them about his theme song and everything, and a fun little bit. So it's a good. This is a fun 15-minute episode, and we will be back next week with more Jack Benny. Thank you for tuning in, all of you who like my introductions. I will keep bringing them to you. I will try and keep them shorter if I can. Sometimes I go longer, and some of you folks, heck, for every couple people that say they should go shorter, there's, you know, 10 more people that will say they like the longer ones. So I don't know. I just kind of try and keep everybody equally frustrated at me. So we'll see you next time.
That was Johnny Green and his boys playing I Don't Want to Make History from the motion picture Palm Springs. And this is Jack Benny back at the broadcasting studio where they appreciate him.
Oh, Jack.
Yes, Johnny.
What are you wearing those smoke glasses for?
I'm not wearing smoke glasses.
Well, that's right. I forgot about that fight we had last week.
Oh, well, I always had rings under my eyes.
Yeah, but you didn't wear beefsteak on them.
I did, too.
Oh, say, Jack, it's none of my business, but I hear you're out at Paramount.
How do you mean that, Johnny? Am I out at Paramount or am I out at Paramount?
Too bad either way.
Say, Mary, did Paramount call me yet?
No, and I think you made a mistake walking out like that.
Well, if they want me, they'll have to give me a bigger part. They know where I am and they can call me. They're probably worried right now.
I'll bet Mr. Paramount won't sleep a wink tonight.
That's his hard luck. Let's go ahead with the program.
But we haven't anything prepared tonight, Jack.
Who cares? Give me my fiddle.
Hey, wait a minute, Jack. Look. See those two fellas sitting there in the second row?
Where? Oh, you mean those two guys with the sour pusses?
Uh-huh.
Who are they?
Leo Robin and Ralph Ranger, the fellas who wrote Love and Bloom.
No kidding. Yeah. Here, hide my violin, Mary. Hey, boys. Boys, come on up here a minute, will you? So you're Leo Robin and Ralph Ranger, the writers of Love and Bloom.
Yep, that's us.
Yep, that's us.
Well, I'm sure glad to meet you.
Thanks, Mr. Benny.
Thanks, Mr. Benny.
Well, one thing you have to admit, boys, I certainly put your song over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The echo spoke first that time.
Well, I want to tell you something, fellas. That's one of the greatest numbers ever written. Ah, what a thought. Can it be the trees that fill the breeze with rare and magic perfume? You know, I've been playing that number for the last 2 years. Did you fellas make any money on it?
Not in the last 2 years.
And you know, boys, I'm an old songwriter myself. You know, I used to put over some of those hits. I wrote Cocktails for Two, didn't I, Mary?
Yeah, with separate checks.
Stop, you little ragamuffin. Of course, you know, Johnny Green has written a lot of song hits, and even Don Wilson. Say, Don, what was that song you wrote?
Oh, you mean the last one, Jack?
Yes, how does it go?
Jalone, the finest dessert in the world. Jalone, Jalone.
Da, 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 da. Oh, sure, we're all songwriters.
Say, Jack. Yeah. Jack, you know these two boys also wrote the number I just played.
You mean I Don't Want to Make History?
Uh-huh.
Oh, is that right, fellas?
Yes, and we think it has a good chance to become popular.
Well, boys, you know what I did with Love and Bloom.
That's why we're here.
Now, wait a minute. Let me have that violin again, Mary. Maybe I can play their new number now.
Here you are, Jack.
Wait a minute. Some tone, hasn't it, boys? Huh?
Yeah. Is it a Stradivarius?
If it ain't, I'm out $10.
Why, Jack, you can't get a Stradivarius for $10.
Well, this is a demonstrator. All right, Johnny, let's go. I Don't Want to Make History.
Don't worry, you won't.
Okay, Johnny, swing it, kid. Well, how did you like it, boys?
That's a catchy tune. What is it?
Why, that's your song.
It is. Give me that fiddle.
Here. Oh, fellas.
Goodbye, Mr. Benny. Let that be a lesson to you.
I don't need lessons. Well, that's gratitude for you. It's the last time I'll ever plug a song. Oh, Mary, not that I care, but did Paramount call me back yet?
No, and let that be a lesson to you.
Well, if they want me, they know where I am. Hey, that must be Paramount now. Answer it, Mary, and tell them that my part must be bigger. You know, act independent. Go ahead, Mary.
Hello. Jack's part must be bigger, and he don't care whether he makes the picture or not.
That's it.
What? Oh, I see. I'll ask them. Hold the wire.
What do they say, Mary?
It's the cook at your house. She wants to know what you want for supper tonight.
Oh. Just tell her some bacon and eggs.
He wants bacon and eggs. Goodbye.
Did you send for me, Jack?
No, I said bacon and eggs.
Oh, I thought you said baker.
Imagine baker and eggs. Sing bacon. I mean Kenny.
Along when I needed you so, we met neath a lucky star. How did it happen? I'll never know. All that I know is darling, you started me dreaming such wonderful dreams, until the day that you happened my way, life was so empty it seemed. You started me dreaming, wondering if dreams do come true. You put a thrill, the first thrill that I ever knew. Days were so lonely and friendless, each day for me was the same. Nights were so long and so endless, the moment you the dream in my heart. Now I can't stop dreaming of.
Too much applause to suit me. That was You Started Me Dreaming, sung by Kenny Bacon. Say, Kenny, you're making a picture out here too, aren't you?
Yes, Jack.
Have you started shooting yet?
Sure, we're getting along fine. And oh boy, they gave me a swell part.
They did, huh?
Yes, I play the part of a lover.
Oh, the lover.
Some casting, Lover and Bacon.
Well, that is swell, Kenny.
Yeah, in one of my big scenes, I'm sitting on a Davenport making love to a blonde, and in walks a butler. And then he hides in a closet and...
Never mind, Kenny, I know the rest. Never mind. Mary, come here a minute, will you?
What?
Did Paramount call you?
No.
Well, one thing about me, I don't worry.
You don't? Then why are you so gray?
Well, battleships are gray. They don't worry, do they? Believe me, you find a battleship that worries. Natty? Say, Mary, listen, I've just thought of a terrific idea. Listen, I'm surprised I didn't think of it before.
What is it?
Well, look, I'll give him 5 more minutes, and if I don't hear from him, I'm going to start my own film company.
You are?
Sure, after all, I've got a name. And what is there to making pictures? All I need is a building, some lights and cameras, a couple of dozen stars, Eugene O'Neill, Edna Ferber, and $5 or $10 million.
How about some postage stamps?
Don't worry, I'll get one. By golly, I'm going ahead with it.
Oh, that's a great idea, Jack. Why, look at Louis B. Mayer, Sam Goldwyn, and Ernest Lubitsch.
Why, certainly, I could do what those guys do. What am I waiting for?
A call from Paramount.
Well, maybe they haven't got a phone. Anyway, what a sucker I was even to consider it. Why, I'll make my own picture. Yes, sir, the Benny Mound Film.
Say, Jack, will you make big pictures?
Will I? Did you ever see Mutiny on the Bounty?
No.
Well, I'll make that first. I want you to see it. Say, Johnny, play something while I get my organization together. Boy, what an idea. I'll show them.
You have just heard I've Got a Heavy Date, written by Johnny Green with Johnny at the piano. And now we take you to the new Benny Mount Picture Company, makers of super colossal features.
All right, boys, all right. I want to thank you for putting up this building while Johnny was playing his number.
It ain't finished yet, boss. There's no roof on it.
Well, put Wilson's hat on it and let's get to work. Now, come on, we got to get into production. Oh, Miss Livingston.
Yes, Mr. Benny.
Put down that Broadway column and come here. This company's going to make pictures. Everybody works.
Yes, sir.
Where's my writing staff?
They're out playing golf.
Playing golf, eh? What am I paying them $1,000 a week for?
To learn how.
Fine staff. They should be creating stories, writing new ideas.
Maybe they can't think of anything.
I never thought of that. Never mind, I'll buy some stories. Who wrote The Taming of the Shrew?
Shakespeare.
Well, get him on the phone.
Operator, get me Venice, 6578.
Who are you calling?
The Merchant of Venice. He's right near Santa Monica.
You're crazy.
Well, it's a living.
Say, Mary, did Paramount call up yet?
No, Jack.
Well, we must get a scenario. What kind of a company is this without a story? Come in. What can I do for you?
Mr. Benny, I understand you're in the market for a good story.
Yes, I am. So, you're an author, eh? What's your name?
Sagai Sitting.
Sagai Sitting. Won't you have a chair?
No, thanks. I'm standing.
Well, make up your mind. Have you written anything before?
Yes, the story of my life and how I was killed.
How you were killed.
I bet he's a ghostwriter.
Quiet. Now, what have you got there?
A great story. Want to hear it?
That's not important. How much do you want for it?
I'll take a cool $5,000.
A cool $5,000. I'll give you a warm $10.
I'll take it. I'm not so hot.
I heard he was going to lose that one. Okay, here you are. So long.
So long.
Well, at last we've got a story.
What's it all about, Jack?
Let me see. Gee, it's terrific. Very topical. It deals with the Irish sweepstakes. Girl wins $150,000, and boy consents to marry her.
Does he marry her?
Yes.
Boy meets squirrel.
Now, that's what makes a great picture, finance and romance, the Irish beefsteak. We'll put this on big. We'll get an Irish tenor, 10 plates of Irish stew, and some Irish linen. Say, this will be the biggest thing ever attempted in Hollywood.
You said it.
Did Paramount call up yet?
No.
Well, let's get our picture started. We got to get going. Come in.
I'd like to see Mr. Benny.
What can I do for you?
I'm an Irish tenor.
Oh, yes, yes, you can use one. What's your name, please?
Tito Ruffle.
Oh, sure, I've seen your name in front of the Metropolitan Opera House. What's your voice, Tito?
Barry Ruffle.
We can use you. What's your salary, Denny? I mean, Ruffle.
I must get $1,000 a week.
Oh, you must, eh? Why?
It costs me $12 a week to live.
I see. What do you think we ought to do, Miss Livingstein? Little switch from the other show. Hear that, Bolger?
Give him $50 and tell him to live 3 days a week.
Oh, I'll talk to him. Now, how about taking $35 a week and 5% of the profit?
Give me $40 and keep the profit.
What profit?
All right, we'll concede a point. Give him a contract, Miss Livingston.
Here you are. Sign here.
Well, wait till I read it.
Oh, trying to take advantage, eh? this four-year contract is all in your favor. The first year, you get $40 a week. The third year, you get $1,200, and the fourth year, $10,000.
What happens to the second year?
You get fired. Sign here, you dope.
All right, but it don't seem right to me.
Now, don't forget, be here at 8 a.m. tomorrow. We start shooting in September.
Okay, so long.
Did Paramount call you?
No.
I can't understand. Now, Miss Livingston, who's the best man in Hollywood to direct an Irish picture?
I got just the man for you. He's waiting outside. Come in, Mr. Mulcahy.
Hello, Mr. Benny. I understand you're looking for a director.
Yes, are you a director?
Am I a director, you guess? Last year I directed the Green Birds of Wimple Street. The year before, the Count of Mexi Cristo. And I just finished Mr. Cohen Goes to Town with Easy Cooper.
Well, have you made any Irish pictures? You see, the name of our picture is A Night in Ireland. You know, that little bit of heaven.
Why not make it a night in Coney Ireland with a little bit of Harry?
I said heaven, not Harry.
Well, that's heaven to me.
Well, I'm sorry, but I don't think you're the right man for this type of picture.
Well, that's up to you. If you want me, give me a call.
Where at?
RKO. I'm directing Fred Einstein and Ginger Rosenberg.
Oh, yeah? Well, wait a minute. Hey, we can use you.
Good, Mr. Hey, goodbye.